Ladies, gentlemen, geeks of all ages, you are now entering BJ Shea's Geek Nation. Welcome.
Welcome to another edition of BJ Shea's Geek Nation. I'm Vicky Barcelona, and with me again, BJ Shea.
Yes.
How do we get rid of you? Is it like ticks? Do we have to like put some kind of powder on you?
Whoa, I mean, if you want, I can head out. There's probably something I can do. Have something tasty.
I'm teasing.
All right, fine.
We like having you here. I just have to give you a hard time, especially because we got your son, Joey D's, with us.
I think the key, Vicky, is to put him in a red shirt and put him in a Star Trek show.
Oh,
oh boy.
Because they never make it. I'll be good. Yes, on today's episode, we will be talking Mandalorian. Not the finale yet, because we want to give you guys some time to watch it.
Mando!
We'll talk with Gareth von Kallenbach about a potential writer's strike.
No, don't say that, Gareth. Don't.
Heroes.
Yes.
Why? That's all I hear when I hear a writer's strike.
We'll talk a little Star Trek Picard. Again, not the season finale, giving you guys a week, but that also had another episode that we can talk about. And BJ will tell us about the Bad Batch season finale. But before that, Vicky, how can the Geek Nationals get a hold of us?
Get a hold of us via our website, bjgeeknation.com. It's going to have our blogs, podcasts, and more. Or just search BJ Shea's Geek Nation on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, iTunes, and the Odyssey app.
Odyssey.
And you'll find us.
And you can find everything that we talk about, including The Mandalorian.
Mando.
So, The Mandalorian has been my Wednesday show for, 7 weeks now?
Has it? Whoa.
Yes, and I am very sad because we only have one more episode left, and as of this recording, I'll have watched it. So my Wednesday show will be gone.
Yes.
But won't we, like, I feel like we'll have something else popping in just shortly after anyway, so. But
I want more Mando.
I know.
More Mando and more Baby Yoda, Baby Grogu.
No.
Because he was adorable in this last episode. No.
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 No. No. And I'm like, God, it is a four-year-old. Oh, my God, that is my life.
So I have recently said that after I put the child goggles on, as I like to call them, and viewed this show more as aired for kids, this show's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I think if you're a toddler like Vicky has a four-year-old, my God, it's just got to be amazing.
He actually watches it with my dad because I don't live with my little brother, but I hear from my dad, who also likes The Mandalorian, that he is like amazed and like super like connected to the show. He loves it.
Because this show has quite the budget.
Yeah, well, not only because of Baby Yoda, you know him as like, it's a pop culture reference, you see him everywhere, so he recognizes Baby Yoda, but I think it's something to do with the spaceships and the armor and the fighting. I mean, little boys like watching fighting, so that's a big
space.
Thing. And the spaceships, I think, will get him every single time.
Yes, and BJ, for me, this reminds me of when we would watch Voyager on a very tiny TV.
Oh, way back in the day. It was really, and we couldn't get the reception very good because this was on a UHF channel in Rochester, New York, and we tried to take the TV and balance it in his room in such a way so we could see the show.
Oh, and it was fuzzy, but it was so fun.
It was so worth it.
And I remember watching those space shows with the tiny ships that would go by and the cool fights. So I imagine this is very similar for your baby brother.
Yeah. Did we? I don't know if we talked about the episode before this, though, the one with the big special guest appearances.
Oh, I think you're right, because we've been off for 2 weeks, so it's been two episodes. Ah,
let's be careful. We don't want to piss anybody off by saying people were on a show.
Because it's been a couple weeks.
Because the internets get mad when people are on a show. It's like, you know, why do they have to have people on a show? This is nothing but a money grab. Yeah, it's called trying to make money, just making a show.
I heard someone, I think it was on our main show, our day job, somebody called in. It's like, yeah, it is fan service. I'm the fan. Service me. And I was like, that is exactly how I feel with some of these. And I was trying to watch that episode because if you haven't seen it already, then, you know, scoot ahead on this little portion here. But we did get a couple of really awesome cameos from big celebrities, including Jack Black, Lizzo, and
Christopher Lloyd.
Thank you. Christopher Lloyd. I kept wanting to say Emmett Brown.
And
Marty.
I think after Andor came out, I got that feel of I want something serious. Because I think that's the point of these shows. It's a little more noticeable when you're not getting what you want at all. But once you get a little bit of everything, you kind of appreciate the other stuff more.
And that's kind of how they're doing with Marvel as well. It's like if you want more of a serious mystery, you can go to one show. If you want something a little bit more lighthearted that maybe is dealing with like your day-to-day thing, like a Miss Marvel, for example, they have everything for everybody. So you're not going to like everything, and that is okay.
And I used to be the nerd rager, so I'll admit it.
I was expecting you you to like
come used have, to be have You've
wow only on things that have high budgets and don't live up to their name.
Fair enough. I was expecting you to maybe have some hate on this, and I was trying to listen and watch it without my fan goggles, but then also enjoy it with my fan goggles. And I will say Jack Black did a wonderful job. I loved him as kind of like this flamboyant king, or whatever his title technically is, but I'm calling him a king. And Lizzo as well. Lizzo, you know, you can tell she hasn't been in a lot of acting roles, but I feel like she nailed it. And also she's posted plenty about how big of a nerd she is, how she never imagined she could be a part of something as big as Star Wars, and that she was super appreciative. So it's not only you're just getting big names, you're getting big names that are excited to be a part of your project.
Yeah.
And I think that's better.
Yeah, I did not have a problem with Lizzo. Like, she didn't take me out of the story.
No.
You know, again, it's like I look at it like, oh, well, you know, she was as good of a quality actor as the dude that played Boba Fett.
I knew you were going to say that.
So the problem was is that Lizzo's not starring in this thing. Lizzo just showed up for an episode.
And
not a
adorable.
Problem. Yeah, I mean, I don't mind the dude that played Boba Fett, who actually played Jango Fett. That guy doesn't bother me because he's not in it a whole lot. I can deal with that. But when it's like, I'm the star. Oh, God, help me.
Yeah, I can see how that gets a little too much, but I feel like people just want to nitpick. If that takes you out of it, then you need to get a better attention span or something, because even I was into it and was able to look past
Question
that.
Your agendas is all I say. Yeah. You know, that's all I would say is why you would complain over that. You know, it's and, you know, the story itself is, as we got rewarded in the next episode, which is the penultimate episode, we got rewarded and go, okay, this has been a slow build season. As Joe said, if you look at it through the child goggles, lots of fun moments, but it was leading somewhere. Sure, if you were doing this show for adults, it probably could have been a 5-episode miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
But they stretched it out to whatever and put a lot of kid stuff in there and slow build.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I think it. 2 years ago, I would have probably complained about not only this season, but this episode. More nowadays, I'm like, yeah, I get it. You know, like, it doesn't have to be fast-paced, and there doesn't have to be a great storyline if you're trying to appease, you know, kids, and you're trying to really draw in that audience and get them connected to this whole universe that is expanding even in the Mandalorian world, because they kind of were a little short-scale for a while, and now they're kind of showing the Republic, and they're showing this, like, new order that's not working out.
Yes.
What blows my mind, and one of the things I think I really love and appreciate about Star Wars, is that you have a vibe of what Star Wars was when you watched the OG movies back in the day, and even when you watched, you know, the prequels back in the early 2000s, but I feel like no world is the same, because at one point you feel like you're kind of in like a space western, and then all of a sudden I feel like I'm in the Blade Runner movie with like the weird cyberpunk color and vibe from that I call her the mole, I forget her name, but the one who's in like in deep for Moff Gideon.
Yes.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. When they shot a scene with her, it was like all purples and blues, so it's like all these different worlds and vibes. It's all futuristic, but then it's not. And that's, I think, what I really love about it.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good point. There is a good mixture of genres within this thing. And they've taken it Western, and then they have taken it cyberpunk and Blade Runner style. So it is cool. And it's well done. It's beautifully shot, beautifully dressed with, you know, with basically the costumes. And the story got good with the spies, which was the penultimate episode of this season. And like Joey D said, we won't spoil for two reasons. One, we haven't seen it yet and as of this recording. And two, we wouldn't do it anyway because it's just too soon.
Right.
For a lot of people that go, wait, 2 days is not enough for me to have seen the last episode of this holy crap. Come on.
So the Jack Black and Lizzo episode pretty much is almost like a Blade Runner-esque one-off episode where they are hired to go find this problem within the re-engineered bots, if you remember those cool, like the little robots, I can't remember, droids.
Yes.
Oh, those things were so cool. I remember, I mean, and it's so playful the way they do it, because I remember those being, you know, heavy-duty killers in the movies.
Droid to cause.
But in this one, you know, Mando's just kicking one. Like, what are you going to do about it? And then,
like, come on. Huh?
Well, that's what you're going to do about it.
Whoops, you pissed off the droid to cause.
Yeah, and not a whole lot to do, I think, with anything but the idea that Mandalorian planet itself might tie back into these other planets as it needs backing because, you know, it's been abandoned. And there's this whole power struggle of, well, there's pirates everywhere now, and the New Order isn't really helping all of the
New
Outer
Republic.
Rim planets. Or, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, hold on. We got a whole different First Order. Let's the New Order might be episode 10. We don't know.
The New Republic has not been helping the Outer Planets. And so you get this kind of cool checks and balances of, okay, well, who's going to do what? Where is the money? Where are the droids? Who has all these big ships? And we find out at the end that the Mandalorians actually have some ships from the old Imperial
ships?
Armory, I think it was.
Well, they've got a cool looking Imperial ship from the Empire with their logo on the bottom, which kind of reminds me of a Romulan Bird of Prey from the old school, where they would have a decal basically, you know, on the bottom of it in the Star Trek world. So it was kind of cool seeing the Mando symbol.
And this is where I believe, Vicky, your prediction came true.
Okay. So if you guys have ever heard of Connor DeWolf, who's that big TikTok star, you see him everywhere, talks about ADHD. He makes a comment on one of these, like, oh, no, people with ADHD, you know, have superpowers, like a, you know, intuition. It's really cool. They can always tell the vibes. However, they're the worst to watch movies or shows with because we always figure out the ending.
Oh.
We always figure things out. And I figured it out, at least one of the things. The other one, we don't know. One of them being how Bo-Katan is going to get the Darksaber back. Because obviously they're not going to fight to the death. Like, they may fight and, like, yield, but they want to do this honorably. And I had mentioned that because she saved Mando's life twice, technically once in a big one. Somebody who defeated Mando, she defeated that guy. So in theory, she could get the Darksaber in that way, that loophole. And she did. And I called it. Called it!
Yeah, you did. And we were just thinking, like, why would they wait so long? Well, they waited for the proper time to reveal that particular info Vicky knew when it actually went down. You also called something else. Mm-hmm. And one of our buddies that we game with that you know, you introduced it to us, he's a huge Star Wars fan. And he was like, hey, I really believe that actually the Armorer is basically going to betray everybody. And Vicky called that. Vicky thought, I think the armor is going to betray. And I like, Vicky, I can't imagine this. I can't see this.
It's like, I don't want her to be the bad guy, but it makes perfect sense.
And he really illustrated himself. And I'm like, wow, this is not the first time I've heard this. And he said, here's why I think. And he believes that basically she's working for Moff Gideon. The whole time she's been working for Moff Gideon, and that's why she told Bo-Katan to take her helmet off, so that basically they're going to just why this whole ambush has happened. She's part of the ambush that happened in the spies, which was this last episode before the finale, and she's in on the whole thing. Even though the only thing we argued is Vizsla, for folks that haven't watched the animated series, Vizsla, the big dude that died.
Yeah, the big gunner.
He actually is an ancestor of another Vizsla who was in charge of the Death Watch and did have he was the original holder of the Darksaber, and he had a whole plot against all of the peaceful Mandalorians that didn't want to fight. There was a whole plot with Darth Maul involved in the animated series.
Interesting.
So the idea that Vizsla, who is a descendant, would not be in on this whole thing, and you saw how hard he fought to try to save everybody.
But we also see how reckless he is. We saw that on the ship when they were fighting over their version of chess, like over the rules. Like, he is, you know what, like, regardless of what side you are, you know he's a good soldier. However, he's not good to be in the whole mix of things because he's just going to be way too volatile.
Well, he basically made it look like there's no plot. That's for sure.
And he did mention in a couple episodes prior when we did see Din try to use the Darksaber and it wasn't working. It was like, I can't wield it. It's too heavy. I'm working against it. It wasn't meant for him. But then, what's his name?
Vizsla, yeah.
Vizsla mentioned, it's like, this was my family's, so I want it back.
Right.
So, I mean, we didn't know a little bit of that, even though we never saw any of the OG stuff.
Yeah, so that's why for him to fight so hard to save Bo-Katan's folks, and Bo-Katan actually was kind of, at least if you watch the animated series, she was also kind of in league with the Death Watch herself. So it's weird that like but then this is the Watch. This is even more extreme. Mm-hmm. We never saw the only helmeted Mandalorians. I don't believe in the animated series. I don't remember seeing just the helmet only folks. So these guys have even sort of become their own splintered group, working perhaps with Gideon. That's the theory from my buddy, which would match your theory that she's betraying everybody.
And I feel like she wouldn't be betraying people necessarily for the sake of, you know, like, I want to be a baddie kind of a thing. I feel like she, because they're their own sector, their own like section of a different of a religion, and they are very, very passionate about their beliefs and the way they live their lives. She's doing exactly what Bo-Katan did. Like, she's like, okay, I'm going to make a pact with you, Moff Gideon, to spare my people. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's kind of mirroring and happening again.
Could very well be. But you have to get Bo-Katan to take the helmet off, because Bo-Katan, she was considered full-blown, like, she was full-blown Mandalorian.
She was baptized.
She was baptized. And so the only way to get the people to turn on her is that she had to get Bo to take her helmet off. Mm-hmm. Meaning, she made Bo think, oh, we're doing it for a good reason, but now... Well, you're not pure, you're not real, we can kill mm-hmm. you. That's my buddy's theory, which mm-hmm. matches sort of Vicky's idea about it. We'll see. Some of you may already know as of the airing of this, but we don't know, and we'll find out soon.
This has quickly become the Bo-Katan season, for sure, if not even, like, I mean, they call it the Mandalorian, but he's almost like a side character at this point.
Yeah, he's kind of that guy now. And that's what people were wondering is like, well, you know, I mean, is this even his show anymore?
It's the Baby Yoda show with Bo-Katan.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, good episode so far. And then in the final episode, the one before the actual finale, we do see Moff Gideon return, as we expected, as the Mandalorians go back to claim their home planet.
And how did he get the Beskar armor? Which, again, the armorer knows how to do stuff like that. So it's like he has Beskar armor. Why does he have it? How did he get it?
Yeah,
that's another reason that maybe there's betrayal.
That does make sense, because I don't know how much of the lore they went into with the Mandalorians, but there is this idea that you can't just make the armor. Like, they do something special after mining it that makes it, you know, unique. Because that's why, you know, the Mandalorian's armor is special.
Well, who forged it for him, and where did he get it all? You know, there's like, you know, all of this.
Because it looks like there's a base on Mandalore.
Yeah.
And so they had been mining it, which I think they kind of alluded to or talked about.
So they've been there for a while.
So they've been there. And it makes sense that that's how he had Veskar or whatever that is that broke him out of the prison ship. And they're like, oh, it must be Mandalorians. But really, it could have just been the stuff he was mining. But the question is, to your point... Well, then who did forge it for him? Because it doesn't look like a normal piece. It looks pretty put together.
Yeah, it does.
So that would make sense. But again, I do wonder what the motivation for the armorer is to betray everyone. Because, I mean, you're in line with Moff Gideon, who stole the Darksaber. Unless we're going to find out that Moff Gideon's actually Mandalorian or something. And
It's a very, very... or there's a backstabbery on both sides.
Yeah, and the forger's not even Mandalorian herself or something.
Oh, you know, that would be
deep-seated spy.
That would be interesting.
But we'll find out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at some articles and seeing if they have anything. One of them hints that the Mandalorian has been hinting that Moff Gideon is Force sensitive. So that's a thing.
But, oh, I don't like that. Yeah. We don't need him being Force sensitive. No, he's already a pain in our butt already. No.
But yeah, a lot of people are saying that could the armorer be working for Moff Gideon? So a lot of people are kind of thinking the same thing.
That's a long con, though, isn't it?
Well, we've seen this. The other girl who's pretending with the long con, the one that basically got the poor clone doctor killed, or... Basically zapped
brain
up.
Brain scrambled,
yeah.
But we also know that after this season finale that they are going to work the Mandalorian into the movies, actually, at some point, or at least that timeline. So we'll see that probably, I would assume, after the next season. So we'll get the wrap-up of season 3, then we'll get season 4 leading to the movie, which is going to be pretty sweet.
Yeah, you got Ahsoka coming out. You got Rey's got a movie coming out. Star Wars is going Marvel, baby.
And I did find an article from thedirect.com, which has a couple of predictions for the last episode, if you guys care to hear them.
Well, that'd be interesting for these predictions, especially if some of you who are listening now have already seen it.
Right. The first one being that Thrawn makes his big debut.
Yeah, we were wondering if they were going to do that for Ahsoka, or if they would do it here. Maybe, you know, almost like a Thanos reveal, which not a whole lot of Thanos, but he was there. And
little facey face.
Maybe.
They did
maybe.
Mention him in that council meeting.
Yes, he was mentioned.
I had to Google him. I'm like, which one was this one again? Oh, yeah, blue face.
Yeah, Thrawn. Yeah, Thrawn is
the blue guy. The blue guy.
In the books and the animated series, Thrawn is huge.
Yes. And then the next one is Disney Plus's Ahsoka will get teased. The Mandalorian's a major death between some of the big ones. So maybe something to do I don't think Pedro Pascal. I think he's pretty safe. But we don't know. Maybe something happens to Bo-Katan. Boba Fett joins the fight. The Mandalorian traitor emerges.
Oh, boy.
Grogu saves the day in his little robot.
Yeah. No, no,
no.
The New Republic arrives on Mandalore. Let's see. The Mythosaur enters the fray.
Oh, the Mythosaur. Right. Forgot about him.
Sequel trilogy connections unfold. So something that connects to the other movies that we've already seen. And then massive cliffhanger for season four. Of course there'll be a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
They want us to, you know, wait and be pissed.
Oh, yeah.
There's going to definitely be some sort of cliffhanger.
Well, we'll have to wait and find out. I'm excited to watch the episode because, as you guys have heard, I've already seen it by now and it'll be over. Yeah. Hopefully this doesn't spoil anything for anyone else who hasn't caught up. But very exciting news. A great end of the season. I know it's a little bumpy in the middle and people weren't too happy, but I think that it returned to form, which is all that matters, because that means for the next season, we're going to get more great action. Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's great because, you know, you've got Bad Batch, which wrapped up their season. They have one more left. That was bittersweet that we're going to get one more season of Bad Batch. And it really does seem to be all about the clone stuff. I feel like, you know, we've had talks of clones in this season of Mandalorian, a lot of talk of clone stuff. And there's a lot of clone stuff going on in Bad Batch, which is, if you don't know, Bad Batch takes place at the end of episode Attack of the Clones, which is episode 2, I believe. And and we're getting to the point now where we're starting to get the stormtroopers. So I believe actually this could be actually the end of episode 3, because episode 3 was Order 66, right? That's when all of Jedi were killed off.
Yes.
That was episode 3.
Yes, because that's when Anakin takes the lightsaber to the pants.
So Bad Batch is actually after episode 3. It's we're seeing now that they're introducing basically human stormtroopers. They want to get rid of all the clones. And there's a clone doctor experimenting on clones. Like they go, it's like, bring all your clones to me. I know you want them out of circulation. We'll get them out of circulation. So already clone experimentation has been happening. We're seeing it in two series with snapshots from two different times in the Star Wars universe. As we know, 5 years later after episode 6 is when Mandalorian takes place, and sometime after episode 3 is when Bad Batch takes place. And the Bad Batch dudes are clones that are different than all of the clones that we're using. They have their own personalities. They look different. They were able to pull the chips out of their head or maybe not have them work at all. So 66 didn't work on them. And they are renegades, and they get betrayed, and they have a small clone they've been running around with for the kid factor named Omega, or Omega, if depending on where you are in the world. And Omega, they really want Omega because they think she's a pure clone that they could actually really do some experimenting on. And her big brothers, if you will, have been protecting her this whole season. They get kidnapped. Everything looks bad. And then Omega finds out one of the scientists leading the case is actually another clone who's her sister. And we didn't know that, though we suspected, because we thought, this one woman is doing all these voices. I know she's adult here and she's a kid here, but it sounds like the same person. Got to be a reason for this. And it turns out it is. That's, you know, she's just a grown version of the female clone. And so it's getting ugly. It's getting ugly for the Bad Batch. They've all been captured, and the clones are all getting experimented on. It ain't good, kids.
But if you're excited to see more Star Wars stuff in the future, coming up in about 2 weeks or so on May 4th, which is on a Thursday, we have two shows coming out. One of them that I feel like I might end up watching because I have the little brother, because this is going to be appearing on Disney Plus and Disney Junior. It's called Young Jedi Adventures.
Oh.
And it very much has the vibe of the show I had talked about a few weeks ago. The Spidey and his amazing friends.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was just thinking.
Yeah, it's exactly what that looks like. It's little kid, adorable animation, cute little Jedis and Yoda.
Yoda's there?
Yep. Oops.
Oh, yeah.
I knocked over some stuff.
Okay, then.
But as well, we're getting another series. I don't know if you guys have already seen Star Wars Visions.
Yeah, this is season 2.
Yes, we got season 2 also coming out on May 4th, which is an anthology.
Oh, it's not out yet. I thought it was already out.
Season 2? No, but May 4th.
Oh, and that is basically so many different, if you will, anthology one-shots, if you will, of all of these different styles and different adventures. Some of them have an anime version to them in the world of Star Wars.
It's kind of like Love, Sex, and Robots on Netflix, but
for Star Wars.
But for Star Wars.
And so many different art styles, animation styles. They were really good. I don't think I watched all of Visions Season 1 yet, and now Season 2, but it obviously was successful enough for them to do it.
And luckily it's an anthology series, so it's just one-shots.
Yeah. But it's an alternate universe of Star Wars, and great. I mean, different writers and artists, animators. Yeah.
And then Ahsoka comes out in August of 2023, so in a few months.
Yeah, that's a while.
That's a long time to wait.
That is a very long time.
But luckily, we have some stuff to tide us over. Always more things coming out in the Star Wars universe, and you gotta like that. Until then, let's talk to Gareth von Kallenbach from Skewed and Reviewed. That is SKNR.net, because we have some interesting writing strike news. With us today, as always, is Gareth Von Kallenbach from Skewed and Reviewed. That is sknr.net. Gareth, we have some looming news. You've alluded to this a little bit. You've messaged me on Facebook a couple times. There might be a strike going down. We can't have any more writer strikes. We've already lost one of our favorite shows, Heroes, to that in the last one. What's going on?
Well, basically, it is the changing pace of media, i.e. streaming, that is causing the problem. So to give people a really quick little bit of history, there have been two recent writer's strike in memory. The most recent one was 2007, and it lasted about 100 days. You had one, I think, before that. One of them was 60 days. One of them was 100 days. And to give you an idea just how much it's changed, one of the original issues for the strikes was how much residuals to pay the writers for DVDs. And then they had this little clause in there for new media, meaning distribution methods that we had not perceived. And it's an extremely complicated issue, so I'll try, obviously, to give you a very simplified version of it for the listeners. The easiest way I can describe it is that in addition to selling a script, when a show or a movie gets made, the writer, the credited writer or writers, get a piece of the action every time it is rerun. Now, this is beyond their fees. This is beyond anything they have in the contract. It says, you know, if the movie makes so much at the box office, you get this, kind of like the actors and the directors do. It's essentially like in the old days when they would rerun a show on television. They got a piece of the action every time the show that they wrote was rerun. Anytime it was reshown on a cable service or over-the-air TV, they got a piece of the action, just like they do for home video sales.
Sure.
So they count on this because, you know, people don't realize you may sell a script for $1 million, but you may not sell one for another 5-10 years. And so they rely on that money every time this thing is shown, as well as their prior works, to be a source of regular income all the way through. So what's happened is the whole issue of streaming has completely thrown this thing out the window because the very complicated mathematical formulas, the writers are saying, this is not like TV or cable where we could say, this thing has been shown on this date, this date, this date. You know, you pull up your HBO, your Showtime, your Cinemax, you could say, oh, look, this movie is scheduled to be shown blank, 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 and blank during the next month. Same thing with television. Streaming, it's out the window. To give you an idea how crazy this has become, Netflix recently had to pay, I believe, the tune of $42 million to about 216 writers over unpaid streaming residuals. The writer for Bird Box got, and I'm just ballparking the numbers, but it's seven figures. I believe it was something in the range of $800,000+ $350,000 in penalties over unpaid residuals. And their take was Netflix's, well, we need to calculate them at this rate. And the writers are saying, no, you've got to calculate them at this rate. And with the huge push of movies being exclusively released on streaming, as well as TV shows, they're saying, you know, this is a problem because we write these things. They're not going to DVD. They're not going to theaters. And they're not being spread around the various networks. It's one spot. They could run them thousands of times till the end of time. And we are not going to get the compensation that we would through other factors.
That's a lot of money. I would not have expected over $1 million just for something like Bird Box. I mean, I know it got viewed a lot of times, but do writers generally make that kind of money on a release of a movie in theaters? Because I would assume that you just pay for the original script, and then once you said like it went to DVD or TV, then maybe you get some residuals. But for something like Bird Box, it was essentially straight to the streaming platform. How did they even know how much to pay them?
Right, and that's part of what the whole thing is, because they had negotiated out rates. And like I said, this is an extremely complicated and difficult problem. And they have, I mean, I know somebody who does some work for us. He is a accountant in Hollywood, and he literally works with the film studios and stuff like that on their production budgets for shows and movies and stuff like that. And he has told me all kinds of things about how insane it is. And he said, you know, you look back in the old days where they would say, okay, fine, you're going to get 25 cents for every DVD and VHS thing sold, or you're going to get a buck for every one of these. At least you had some kind of math for how many were shipped, how many were sold. He said, you know, the movie stuff, you have an idea because we know what the box office is on these films, and they're very carefully checked. I mean, you can always play the game of, you hear the stories about, yeah, the movie made nearly $1 billion, but it hasn't made a profit. Well, that, you know, that's all, as he calls it, Hollywood accounting. But you're right. Streaming is tricky because you have some companies that are happily come out and say, this is how many people and how many hours have streamed this shows. You have some that will not put that data out there. And that makes it very tricky because, you know, think about this. I'll give you a prime example. Let's take a look at the new Alien movie that's in the works. They're filming it right now. And originally it was told to us that it was going to be like Predator or Prey, was going to be released strictly for Hulu inside the U.S. and, you know, other markets. Well, unconfirmed reports are saying, well, that may not be right because it may get a theatrical release. Now, whether this is the game of, well, we got to release it in theaters for a week or two in order to get awards consideration and then going on streaming, who knows? But when you're the writer, you write this thing out not knowing what's going to happen to it. You're writing an Alien movie. Studio comes in and says, we're going to buy your script. Boom, everyone's happy. But when filming starts, you don't know if it's going to the theater. You don't know if it's going to streaming. You don't know if it's going to both. Or back in the day, remember, they could just shove them straight to home video. And that is where the problem is coming in, because people, the writers are saying, we're going to lose an absolute fortune if our stuff is bypassing cinemas, bypassing television, bypassing, you know, traditional cable, and, you know, literally just staying on one particular streaming service.
That is so tricky, too, especially since the prices fluctuate for subscriptions and things, and so to determine what it's worth and how you're going to shoot it, I mean, that must just be a nightmare. I don't know how they're going to go forward, you know, deciding this, but it sounds like there's at least been a precedent set that, I mean, this Bird Box, you know, writer is getting paid. So I think these streaming services might be in a little bit of trouble.
Right, and see, and that's where the whole larger picture comes, because let's be honest, the studio's mandate is to keep costs down and be profitable. They took a beating during the pandemic. They're saying, we're just now getting people coming back to the theaters. You and I have talked about people are coming back to the event movies, but they're trying to get them to come to the rank and file things. They're saying, you know, look, you know, the big movies are still going to theaters. This is the way it is. But I think we can all agree more and more content is going on streaming than ever before. And you have this whole nightmare of what is going to happen, because to give people a little bit of a refresher course, the last time there was a strike doesn't mean Hollywood shuts down. Scripts that are written can still be filmed. The problem is, what happens if you go, oh boy, this isn't working, we got to rework this scene? You can't do it. And as you mentioned with Heroes, very strong first season, and you would see other shows where when they did come back after a delay, a very delayed fall season, shows came back with reduced budgets to try to make up for losses, and then much shorter production windows where it kind of looked like it was just slapped together to essentially meet a deadline. You know, traditionally, September is when the fall TV season starts. You had shows that were not coming back until October, November, some into December. And then let's also not forget the standard TV networks. You would see 20 to 22 to 26 episode seasons. On streaming, you have 8 to 12 episode seasons. That also is factoring into it.
Yeah, I mean, the quality definitely dips, and then obviously like delays and reshoots. I mean, some the reshoots can't even happen if you don't have writers a lot of the time. Big picture, Gareth, how much of this quantity are we going to lose? Are we going to see people be a little bit more hesitant? Studios decide maybe to cancel a lot of projects. We've seen it in Star Wars already. Star Wars cancels projects left and right.
Yeah, and that's basically what's going to happen. It's going to be a case by case basis, but they have until May 1st to come to an agreement, or at least say we're making enough progress that we'll continue. The union has overwhelmingly voted to strike, but that has been their standard policy, is that they set a date ahead of time to say, that's it, we're ready to go on strike, because it essentially adds incentive to the other side to get this thing worked out. The last couple of times, though, we've had strikes, and you sit there and you look at any studio. So let's just, for the sake of example, let's just take Disney. Their summer slate's already set. We've got the Marvel films. You've already got the Marvels. You've already got Guardians of the Galaxy 3 already set. You've got TV shows, filming away, that sort of thing for Disney Plus. Where you get into an issue is something like the recently finished Mandalorian. Now, supposedly, he's already written the script for season 4. So you can, in theory, say, all right, these are good to go. Let's rock and roll. But if you have another project, or if you said, you're sitting there going, something's not working, we got to rewrite this scene, that's completely out the window. And people don't realize this can be as simple as a talk show, because if they don't have their writers writing their material, they don't have it. And the only option they have is like Carson had to do back in the day, where he basically said, I'm going to cross the line and write my own monologues. And this was after being out for so many times. So what you're going to see is projects where the studios are going to be looking at it saying, this strike went on for this long. Maybe these on the bubble TV shows, on the bubble projects, we can't afford to bring them back now. And that's the problem, because it all comes down to how much is it going to cost each individual group? How long is this going to go on? And once done, they're going to have to sit there and say, how do we recover our losses? What can we get through economically and fast? And what basically is going to be too expensive and too costly to start up? And, that becomes a problem for TV shows in production, because you kind of get to a point where they could say, much easier to just cut our losses and say, that's it, this is the final season, or just outright cancel it, than it is to try to start back up again.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, I fully support the artists in getting what they deserve. I mean, I can't imagine making any of those decisions myself from a company standpoint or production standpoint. I don't even know how you, like you said, the math has to be wildly complicated to make that, decision for streaming platforms. I do hope that the strike doesn't last long and everyone gets a fair deal, because at the end of the day, we do want more stuff coming out. We'll have to wait and see, though, Gareth. But oddly enough, right around the corner is CinemaCon, and I know that you've been looking forward to this.
Yeah, CinemaCon, for those who don't know, it's a showcase that takes place in Vegas. It's going to take place next week from Monday through Thursday. And what happens is the studios and select press, we're going to be there, get to come out, and we see all kinds of things. There's usually a corridor full of posters that announce upcoming films, that sort of thing. You have a exhibition hall that shows everything from new kinds of concessions and games and stuff that'll be available in theaters. This is where you see some of those popcorn and drink cups that are tied in. Like in the past, we had some for the upcoming Jurassic World movies, theme things like that. But for us, the big deal is the studio showcases. Now, unlike somewhere like San Diego Comic-Con, where it is specific shows and movies, these are studio showcases. So to give you an example, Monday, Sony kicks it off. Tuesday, you're going to have something from Disney. Wednesday, you'll have like Warner Brothers and Universal. And then Thursday, you'll have like Paramount and Lionsgate. And what they generally do is they come out and they will talk to a audience of about 3,000 to 4,000 people that are theater owners, theater industry people, studio people, as well as press. And they will generally come out and say, basically a sizzle reel, hype things up. This is what we've got coming out. We're really committed to theaters. This is why you should be excited. They'll bring out celebrities. It ends with an award show. But, like, to give you an idea, last year for Sony, they came out and showed us the first reel for Bullet Train. They came out and showed us a couple of their other upcoming projects. They had celebrities come out on stage. They showed us a rough cut of the upcoming animated Spider-Man film. Sometimes they show full movies, like they had the premiere of Ghostbusters Afterlife. We already know of a couple of very, very high-profile films that are coming later this summer that they've already told us will be shown for us at the show. We had to sign paperwork essentially saying we're not going to tell anybody a thing about it, we're not going to review it, we're not going to do anything. And then you get a bunch of behind-the-scenes clips of trailers, you know, like my son is thrilled to death because he is a huge shark fan. He's very excited about the Meg 2 The Trench that's due out later this year. He's hoping we're going to get a poster and a trailer, but a lot of this closed-door stuff that, you know, what you show may not even be seen. Last year, they showed a look at the new Borderlands movie. We still haven't seen a peep of it a year later. And so everyone's very excited about what are we going to see. Some things we know, some things we can only speculate. We're pretty sure they're not going to address this, but there's that whole buzz of how many of these things that are done we know are coming out. How many of these announced things? Because we had things last year that were announced, and now we're hearing stories about, you know, they don't really have a script. They're kind of in limbo, and these are the things that an extended writer's strike could kill outright.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, like, as you mentioned, the movies on that list from last year are all great. I really enjoyed Bullet Train. Is there anything in particular you're looking forward or hoping that you're going to see, obviously, besides Meg 2, that it sounds like you and your son will enjoy?
Oh, yes. So I have my thing. I'm very curious about Warner Brothers. I expect we're going to get something from their DC films. But, of course, you know, we've talked about the Warner Brothers Discovery issues in the past. I'm very curious to see what they're going to come forward with and how, you know, what their hype is beyond the DC projects. Disney, very, very curious about Disney because, you know, we know about Guardians 3. We know about the Marvels. I'm curious. We know about Elemental, the new animated film that's coming later this year. Curious about what other projects we're going to hear about. You know, people are going, well, now that Fox is part of the picture, are we going to get anything on the Alien film? Are we going to get this? And, you know, might be too soon to get anything because they've only been filming for a few months. But that's part of the mystery, you know, what is going to be unveiled. And like I could tell you, one of the things last year was you'd walk in and like, oh, Top Gun Maverick, there's a big poster. You expect that. And then as you start walking down the hall, you're like, huh, that's interesting. That was like the first time I'd seen or heard of Megan.
Oh.
There was this big poster, and I'm like, huh, that's interesting. Oh, look at that. It's coming out in a couple of months. And, oh, we got Joe Coy's Easter Sunday. That looks interesting. And so, I mean, it's a mix. You'll see a slasher film right next to a comedy, right next to a drama, and then that's all the big hype is what are we going to see in the showcases? And, you know, it's very interesting because there's just so much stuff. There's all this speculation. I mean, for example, I'm talking Warner Brothers again, Dune Part 2. Everyone's like, are we going to see a trailer? Are we going to see new footage? Are we going to get a poster? You would think that's a possibility. They just had a teaser out the other day for the King Kong Godzilla film. Are we going to get something on that? You know, who knows? What is going to be the thing that we don't know about that we've not heard a peep about? And boom, here it is. Who are the celebrities that are going to come out? And that's what makes it so interesting.
Oh, most definitely.
Know. We do know something about Transformers. We have been told that there's going to be a reception for the new Transformers film. And so people are kind of hoping, are there going to be props? Are there going to be things like that? But, you know, it's Vegas, and that's what makes it exciting.
Oh, most definitely. I can't wait to hear your reactions from it, Gareth. I know you won't be able to talk too much about what you saw, but, I mean, you're going to be able to tell us about your feelings, how hyped you are for all these movies, and, like, that list you just read off, man, I'm excited for pretty much every one of those franchises. I cannot wait. We'll have to find out in about a week and a half when you get back. Gareth, thank you again so much for joining us. Always great to catch up with you.
Anytime. Take care now.
Thank you so much again, Gareth. Oh, my gosh. You know, as Vicky alluded to earlier in this episode, the last time we heard about a writer's strike, one of my favorite shows ended up
sucking the big one.
Yeah, that pretty much that.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and never recovered.
That
never,
poor
ever.
Show was doomed. We're talking Heroes. It was doomed because they had to do a whole rewrite of the first season anyway because of 9/11.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and if you had that DVD copy when you got to see, there was a whole other actor, and they had all these scenes shot, mm-hmm. and they had to take the. They basically said, "No, this is very too close to home to 9/11. We have to change everything," and they even got a new actor to play the part of the exploding dude. There was a lot of footage lost, and if you care about Heroes and never saw that, it's fascinating to see the alternate storyline that was supposed to be the original storyline.
But Zachary Quinto killed it on that first season.
Yeah,
I a long time ago got rid of my DVDs because they came out. I remember the DVD. This is how old I am. The DVDs would come out in the big old package. Like once a year, and it was always around my birthday, so I would go into the store, like the Sam, not Sam Goody, but one of those, and I would buy, you know, the pack, and they'd give you the poster for the season, and it just made me sad, so I had to give it up.
Fun show, bad last season.
Last few seasons.
Yeah. Moving on from bad seasons to something that actually had a great season so far before its finale, which we will talk about hopefully in 2 weeks. Star Trek Picard.
And again, some of you may have already seen this finale, but it's way too close to the airing of this episode to really spoil it for a lot of folks. And also, we haven't seen it yet as of this recording. Just a couple days, that's all we have to do. Last week's penultimate episode, though, Vox. Oh, man, oh, man. The only complaint I have is I wish we didn't have so much Borg in season one and season two.
Then
it would have been amazing. It would have been like, oh my God, it's been a while since I've seen these guys. But it was almost too predictable. It's like, it probably is the Borg. Is it going to be the Borg? I mean, it'd be lame if it isn't. But that's the only thing I don't like about this season. But I can't really blame them because if it's a send-off, I mean, the Borg are one of the best baddies that in the Next Gen and other Trek shows have had.
And that's kind of my thing about this season three. Season three feels like its own show. Like Star Trek, Picard season one and two almost don't exist in my mind.
It sure feels that way.
And then season three is like this, you know, pretty well put together storyline. It's not perfect, but it's, you know, for a rehashing of an old show that is almost, what, 40 years old now, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I think they've done a great job. And to your point, we only see this coming because the Borg have been such big players in the first two seasons.
And if people argued whether or not they really belonged in, like, what was the big deal? Yeah, I suppose they had a little bit more of a role in season two, but season one, don't forget the Borg cube was there, the artifact.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, it was cool. Got to, you know, I mean, there was, it was good to see Hugh again. I like Hugh. But yes, this here, though, very, very good. All the nostalgia, all the feels, as basically we know, you know, they, and I love how Geordi's daughter said, hey, what about Hangar 12? Don't talk about that right now, in an earlier episode when they were at the Starfleet Museum, and you're like, well, it better be like the Enterprise. It's got to be the Enterprise
be?
D, right?
Yeah.
Or some version, and it surely was, as we got the reveal of the Enterprise D. And if you watch The Ready Room, Will Wheaton got to go geek out with Michael Okuda, who has been with Star Trek forever, is one of the behind-the-scenes guys who's designed almost everything, and took a tour of, and Will was like, oh my God, it's not the same set. It's rebuilt completely.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a whole rebuilt set that they made look just like Enterprise, but the set, because I think that set has been restored somewhere as a place you can go visit. Like somebody bought the set or bought some of the parts of it, and you can tour it just like the original one that James Cawley has somewhere in the country for Star Trek, the original series. You can go tour his set. Like it's like a little museum you can go into.
I thought we had been on that set. I don't know if the actual original one we had been on, but we had been on that set for the ride, right?
Yeah, that might be the one that these people have.
The replica
is the one from Las Vegas on the Star Trek Experience, yeah.
Because that was awesome.
It was so cool. You wanted to stay there. We didn't stay long. They were running us around, and we're like, we kind of want to walk around the bridge. Don't rush us off the bridge.
Yeah, it's very similar to a Star Wars Disney 3D experience kind of thing, or 4D, actually, I guess what they consider, where they walk you around actual live sets with actors who are dressed up as Borgs, and they're trying to invade you, and you're trying to get off the ship, and it's awesome.
Yeah, it was really cool. Then they threw us on a shuttle, and it was like the big ride. Oh, the Borg's coming at you. And so pretty much... Yeah, you wonder how are they going to actually get out of this as the Borg have taken over Starfleet with the help of the Changelings, which has been all season long. The Changelings have been working for the Borg. And that made sense. That face that Vadek was talking to was a little slightly monotone, and now we know she was basically talking to, what, a changeling Borg? I don't know.
Yeah, that is the interesting thing. I do say that as far as, like, a storyboard goes, I think this does make sense. I don't know if it translated as well as it could have into the season. We spent a little bit too much time on some characters I'm not going to mention that happen to not be in the show, and then the show's a lot better. Raffy.
Whoa, okay then.
But the idea of the Borg working with the changelings is interesting because we know that the changelings, obviously, from the Deep Space Nine, have a lot of hate for the Federation. And we also know that the Borg have kind of split off into different sects, essentially. And this is could have easily been one that still hates, you know, the Federation, wants to assimilate. So that all makes sense. The transporter thing with Jean-Luc Picard's DNA is a bit of a stretch, but I thought it was cool.
Like, it was clever.
Yeah.
Basically, the Borg are invading everybody through the transporter, and somehow it only affects young people. So, like, all the geriatrics have to fight back somehow.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, okay, that makes sense. That's fine. I mean, again, it's one of those things where you're almost crossing into fantasy a little bit with the whole, well, his DNA is special, and that's why we need it. But at least it did tie into the Star Wars universe and the lore a little bit, where it's like, well, it's because he was a Borg, and it was because he developed this thing later that we knew about, and then he had a son that we didn't know. And it's a lot of pieces that come together that didn't necessarily happen in the original show, you know, in the sense of, like, he didn't have a son.
We didn't know about that.
And he didn't know they had this, like, mental condition that he developed, but...
Well, we did know about that disease.
Well, then it was something else.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It turned out it wasn't a mental disease.
It's not this, it's that.
Yeah, that was like, oh, no, you never had that. The Borg did it to you. Oh.
But in terms of, like, that, I was like, all right, well, you know, that's at least it was all there. It wasn't like they just made something up out of thin air where they're like, well, actually, he has a wart on the back of his, you know, left hand, and that is a... special uranium that they need to do something with.
And the showrunner, Terry Mosalis, you know, he's done a great job. He's a huge fan, and he has done a great job. He's got the praises are sung by the people that are working with him, the cast and everything. And, yeah, so we are ready for a big battle, as it's the Enterprise-D versus the entire Federation fleet for Frontier Day, which I didn't realize Frontier Day did basically, it's all about the time that the Federation was semi-formed when Captain Jonathan Archer went and made peace, helped make peace with the Andorians, the Tellarites, the Vulcans, and they all got together and hung out, and that's what Frontier Day is supposed to celebrate, is that moment when they did this charter and created basically what was the foundation of the Federation.
Yeah, and this is essentially a Star Trek show of nostalgia trip for Star Trek fans.
Yep.
And that's fine, because that's what I thought Picard was going to be.
Yeah.
So, happy that we're getting it in the third season. I mean, how many different feels did you get? You got the Geordi Data speech. You got the Ready Room meeting with all the old cast. You got the Enterprise again.
You got Data beating Lore, finally.
Yes. Yeah. And then in a good way. I actually thought, all right, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, Data was actually very intelligent with how he took over his brother, who basically, and they both inhabited the same body, and the brother looked like he was going to take control.
Well, that was that was well done in my mind because of the Sung dynasty that he essentially was left. And he was like, well, I think at the end of the day, with all of us in one body, what will end up happening is it'll be a merger of Data and Lore and then our programming. I was like, I actually thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, it was good. And, you know, and it was great to see Lore and Data finally figure it out. It's like everything you would want to do for the end of a show that never got done at the end of the show.
Yes.
You know, when the series ended, seems to be happening. And now we are left to wonder, and we should, you know, like Vicky said, we let's have some predictions of what we think is going to happen, though a lot of you might have seen it already by the airing of this podcast. But Jack, of course, better be doing something, as he was assimilated, basically, at the end of this episode. He went voluntarily to be the Borg Queen. Don't know which Borg Queen this is because of last season.
And they didn't show us a face.
Yeah, so I don't know if this is what the heck is going on. And then if it isn't the Allison, you know, the Allison Pill actress, that Borg Queen that we saw last season, will she save the day? Will Jack save the day? Are they going to get help from other... I saw a preview, and it doesn't look like they're going to get help from anybody because they sent out distress signals, and they're all blocked. So, like, there are the Romulans, the Klingons, whoever else is part of the Federation. They didn't join up against the fleet, so could another fleet come and help? Of course, it would decimate. I mean, it's horrible either way you look at it.
Yeah, so I honestly, like, got to the end of that episode, I'm like, I don't know how they're going to win. Like, it's going to be something, but I'm excited to find out.
Yeah, and will they bring out any more people? Like, are there any more people from Next Gen Past that are going to guest star in this last episode? Because I don't know if you recognize Shelby.
No.
Okay, Admiral Shelby, and this is why when Picard said the fact that she would join all these ships together like this, it's very Borg-like, very ironic. Admiral Shelby was in The Best of Both Worlds. She was the blonde who was trying to take Will Riker's job.
Oh, wow.
She was brought in to be the Borg expert, and she was the one that said, well, I hope to impress Captain Picard, but, you know, to get the job. And Riker's like, what job are you talking about, Shelby? Your job. Actually, she never even had a name on the Best of Both Worlds episodes. It was just Commander Shelby.
That's
so I was like, oh, that is so awesome that they brought her back for this one thing. And it looks like she wasn't back long, but she was back. And
no.
Yeah. So that was a cool bring back, you know, and we've had Ro. And so who are they going to bring back? Will there be one more guest star, like somebody that maybe?
Well, I was going to say we saw Tuvok, but there were rumors that Janeway was going to make an appearance at some point.
I don't have a problem with that at all.
That would be awesome.
She's an admiral. Let her kick ass, damn it.
Well, we'll have to wait and see. Again, you guys may have already seen it, but we will talk about it in the near future. But until then, we must get to
The Geek Sheet with Vicky B.
Because it's Movie Friday, Vicky.
Movie Friday. And yeah. I do actually have a little bit of Star Trek news, excuse me, about a movie.
The Final Frontier.
It has been announced a couple days ago, so this is big and important, and I didn't want to not mention it. But it has been officially confirmed that Michelle she's having Section 31, but as a film. Confirmed. Instead of a series, they're wanting to make a Section 31 series, but it has now officially been confirmed that they're going to be doing it as a movie specifically for Paramount Plus.
I'm so happy that it's only a movie because I feel like that's all we need.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that was the prequel to the Discovery first season. Is that the idea what it's going to be? Because Section 31 was the people that she worked for, correct?
Yes. Section 31 was Michelle Yeoh went and joined them I should say Giorgio, the evil Giorgio from the Mirror Universe. She joined Section 31 and they helped beat Control, which was season three's.
After.
Yeah. So, but Section 31 has been around since I think we were first introduced with Deep Space Nine. They're the ones that infected the Borg, infected the changelings. And so they were brought up in the latest season of Picard. That was Section 31 that did that. So Section 31 has been shadowy. We've seen them also talked about in Enterprise, I believe. But they were introduced in Deep Space Nine. And as it seems, they've been around a long time. Mm-hmm. Section 31 it's this unofficial spy network of Star Trek that you kind of go, wow, I don't know if Roddenberry would have approved this because they're a-holes.
And that's actually what this article, it's from a comicbookresources.com. They said that even though it is a long-running presence in the franchise, it remains a controversial part of the lore because many fans believe the concept of a black ops team going to an extreme and awfully deadly lengths to protect the Federation undermines the core message of the world, which is kind of what you're saying.
Yeah, and Jonathan Frakes backs me up on this.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and you know what? Look, Jonathan Frakes, he's been all over Star Trek, directing, acting, so I think that this guy gets to have an opinion, definitely.
He knows a thing or two.
Yeah, he gets to have an opinion, and he respectfully believes that Gene is wrong, because Gene never wanted conflict. That's the idea. He never wanted the humans to be in conflict with each other. You know, he wanted them all to get along. But the thing is, Gene hid all his conflict with all of the alien races, and I look at it like, that's a cop-out, and if any Star Trek fan goes, well, it's okay for the Klingons to be a-holes. It's okay for the rhyme. They're still beings. And if you're talking about wanting to have a wonderful utopian universe, you can't go, well, those guys aren't as enlightened as us. So, no, conflict exists everywhere.
Yes.
And so that's what Jonathan Frakes says, and I agree. Star Trek is great when you still have conflict amongst humans, because we will never be free of that. I just don't think we ever will.
It is within our nature. Yeah. I feel like it within the nature of a lot of beings.
And I think that Deep Space Nine was a great show, and it was because they had a lot of conflict and they had a lot of moral questions and crossed lines. They had to live.
But we do actually have some movies that are coming out this week, as well as some that have come out previously, but we weren't here. And this movie, I'm trying to remember what it was said. It was like Edgar Wright means something else. What was it? Edgar Wright means Quentin Tarantino. So if you mix Edgar Wright and Quentin Tarantino, you have this movie.
Oh,
and it has
wow.
an actress that we very much like. You may not recognize her name, Ritu Ira. She was in...
Oh, I do know who...
I
do recognize that name. What was she in?
She was in The Umbrella Academy.
Ah!
Lila or Layla.
Oh, Lila. Yeah, Lila's so good.
But this one's called Polite Society. As of right now, it's got 94% on the tomato meter.
Whoa.
And it looks really badass. It's a merry mashup of sisterly affection, parental disappointment, and bold action. Polite Society follows a martial artist in training, Rhea Khan, who believes she must save her older sister, Lena, from her impending marriage. After enlisting the help of her friends, Rhea attempts to pull off the most ambitious of all wedding heists in the name of independence and sisterhood.
All right.
I saw the trailer. It popped up as one of my ads, and it looked so badass, so fun. It's going to be coming out this Friday, or today. Yes, today is Friday. Oh, man. It looks like it's going to be a fun one. As of right now, it looks like it's only in theaters. So go check that out if that's nearby. Or if you're still kind of feeling like you want some Star Wars, check your select theaters. Star Wars Return of the Jedi 40th anniversary is going to be premiering in some theaters.
No, really? Yeah, it's 2023, 40th anniversary.
Wow.
That's right, 1983. This kid stood in line with your mom, Joe. She was my girlfriend at the time, and she was...
wasn't a joke. It was literally your mother. Hey.
Yeah, she was a trooper, but I was like, gotta stand in line for this.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, because back then you couldn't buy tickets or anything.
No,
you stood in line, man. And, I mean, they probably put it on all the screens they could at the time, but we didn't have the theaters like we have today.
No, so to watch it on a big, maybe even IMAX screen, depending, check your local listings. If that is something that is up your alley, definitely go check that out. Some movies that have, I think this one's also coming out this week, so before I get into last week's, I will be so glad when these freaking trailers and ads stop showing when I'm watching my YouTube at night, because it's scary. Evil Dead Rise.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Creepy, and every now and then it's like, la, 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 video. Oh, no, don't look.
Is it a show?
It's a movie.
It's a movie, and is our boy Ash in it, or?
No.
So it's a whole, is Sam Raimi part of this?
It does not look like it, at least not from, like, the first glance over. It looks like the director is Lee Cronin.
Okay.
Produced by Rob Tappert, but it's getting well-reviewed as of now, 96% with 51 reviews. Granted, that could change.
And it is the Evil Dead universe.
Yes, and I remember there being another Evil Dead movie years ago, because I was forced to go to the theater and watch it. I was not happy. But that one did not have Ash in it as well. It was kind of like a, not a reimagining, but a reboot, because they had a lot of the same themes as the Ash one. Like, the girl, I think, had a chainsaw, and I don't remember. She might have chopped her hand off, too. But yeah, if you like the Evil Dead franchise, check it out, because I won't.
Too scary.
I do want to get into some of the other ones that have come out since we last talked. The Last Kingdom, Seven Kings Must Die. This one is getting, it's a Netflix movie, and I've seen it high on the list of, like, must-watch movies. Not really, I don't know too many of the actors. They all look very British and very fancy. But it's Alexander Draymond reprises his lead role as the great warrior Uhtred of Bebbanburg. Say that 5 times fast.
Oh, so this is a second production?
I don't know if it's a second movie or if this is like from a TV or series to a movie. So if this is up your alley, if you like horses and medieval times and sexy accents, kind of Viking-esque.
Ooh, sexy accents.
Yes, definitely check this one out. As well as we have, we already did Evil Dead, the Super Mario Brothers movie. Everyone was hating on it in the, tomato meter part, 58%, but the audience score is 96% with over 10,000 verified ratings.
Well, this is one of those things where, I mean, if you're a Mario fan, how are you not going to like the movie? And if you're a critic, unless you're a Super Mario fan, you're probably, and maybe it's a fan servicey thing. That's the trouble with movies nowadays is that critics will go, well, I'm going just as a critic. It's like, yeah, now we're making movies for the fans. And
for kids. Yeah, this is definitely a kid movie.
Yeah, I heard this one didn't hit like the Lego movies. I think that was the big disappointment. As they said, the budget and the world was there, but the plot and everything and the humor was kind of hit or miss.
Oh.
What was the humor? I'm wondering if it was hit or miss because the humor was meant for kids, or were they trying to be that, like, they were trying too hard to also appeal to adults. I'm debating on going to see this in theaters with the little brother because...
Yeah, you'd have to go to see to see what Joey's talking about,
exactly.
I would think, because that made the Lego movie special was the writing.
But I felt like the Lego movie, yes, it worked for kids, but I felt like it was very fun for adults. So I'm very curious on how this translates, although I hear that there is a song that Bowser sings about Peach. That is supposed to be phenomenal.
All right.
Especially since Jack Black sings.
I don't know if that's worth me seeing the movie with my money. I have so many services, I might wait.
You might wait to see it. Another one that I really would like to watch at some point, it's called Renfield. This is the horror comedy movie with Nicolas Cage.
Well, I liked his Unbearable Weight movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, I think Nicolas Cage is on the comeback.
We also have Nicholas Hoult in it as well. Awkwafina, Ben Schwartz.
Oh, Awkwafina's awesome.
Oh, yeah. She's pretty fun. This looks all kinds of shenanigans. It's modern day. Like, it looks like, excuse me.
Oh, pardon me.
Renfield is actually Nicholas Hoult's character, his master being Dracula, played by Nicolas Cage. I kind of saw some of the trailers looking like old-timey, like Dracula, and so it looks like he's been with him for a very long time.
Yeah, I'm not a huge Dracula fan, but if it's on something free, I'll probably watch it.
I'll probably go check it out at some point if I can get a date.
You need a date to go see it because it's too scary?
Yes. Okay. I don't know. Because sometimes his teeth freak me out a little bit. So I don't know. I'm like in that, like, eh. And also scary, The Pope's Exorcist, which is getting 83% on the audience score. So
The Pope's Exorcist. Like the title.
It's got Russell Crowe.
I know that guy.
As Father Gabriel. So yeah, if you like the scary stuff, there's plenty out for you. And until next time, stay nerdy.
I cannot wait. We'll have to find out in about a week and a half when you get back. Gareth, thank you again so much for joining us. Always great to catch up with you.
Anytime. Take care now.
Thank you so much again, Gareth. Oh my gosh. You know, as Vicky alluded to earlier in this episode, the last time we heard about a writer's strike, one of my favorite shows ended up
sucking the big one.
Yeah, that pretty much that.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and never recovered.
That poor show was doomed. We're talking Heroes. It was doomed because they had to do a whole rewrite of the first season anyway because of 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and if you had that DVD copy when you got to see, there was a whole other actor, and they had all these scenes shot, mm-hmm. and they had to take they basically said, no, this is very too close to home to 9/11. We have to change everything, and they even got a new actor to play the part of the exploding dude. There was a lot of footage lost, and if you care about Heroes and never saw that, it's fascinating to see the alternate storyline that was supposed to be the original storyline.
But Zachary Quinto killed it on that first season.
Yeah,
I a long time ago got rid of my DVDs because they came out. I remember the DVD. This is how old I am. The DVDs would come out in the big old package, like once a year, and it was always around my birthday. So I would go into the store, like the Sam Goody, but one of those. And I would buy, you know, the pack, and they'd give you the poster for the season. And it just made me sad. So I had to give it up.
Fun show. Bad last season.
Last few seasons.
Yeah. Moving on from bad seasons to something that actually had a great season so far before its finale, which we will talk about hopefully in 2 weeks. Star Trek Picard.
And again, some of you may have already seen this finale, but it's way too close to the airing of this episode to really spoil it for a lot of folks. And also, we haven't seen it yet as of this recording. Just a couple days, that's all we have to do. Last week's penultimate episode, though, Vox. Oh, man, oh, man. The only complaint I have is I wish we didn't have so much Borg in season one and season two.
Then
it would have been amazing. It would have been like, oh my God, it's been a while since I've seen these guys. But it was almost too predictable. It's like, it probably is the Borg. Is it going to be the Borg? I mean, it'd be lame if it isn't. But that's the only thing I don't like about this season. But I can't really blame them because if it's a send-off, I mean, the Borg are one of the best baddies that in the next gen and other Trek shows have had.
And that's kind of my thing about this season three. Season three feels like its own show. Like Star Trek, Picard season one and two almost don't exist in my mind.
It sure feels that way.
And then season three is like this, you know, pretty well put together storyline. It's not perfect, but it's, you know, for a rehashing of an old show that is almost, 40 years old now, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I think they've done a great job. And to your point, we only see this coming because the Borg have been such big players in the first two seasons.
And if people argued whether or not they really belonged and like, what was the big deal? Yeah, I suppose they had a little bit more of a role in season two, but season one, don't forget the Borg cube was there, the artifact.
Mm. Yes.
You know, it was cool. Got to, you know, I mean, there was, it was good to see Hugh again. I like Hugh. But yes, this here though, very, very good. All the nostalgia, all the feels, as basically we know, you know, and I love how Geordi's daughter said, hey, what about Hangar 12? Oh, don't talk about that right now. In an earlier episode when they were at the Starfleet Museum, and you're like, Well, it better be like the Enterprise. It's got to be the Enterprise D, right?
Yeah.
Or some version, and it surely was as we got the reveal of the Enterprise D. And if you watch The Ready Room, Will Wheaton got to go geek out with Michael Okuda, who has been with Star Trek forever, is one of the behind-the-scenes guys who's designed almost everything, and took a tour of, and Will was like, oh my God, it's not the same set. It's rebuilt completely.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a whole rebuilt set that they made look just like Enterprise, but the set, because I think that set has been restored somewhere as a place you can go visit. Like somebody bought the set or bought some of the parts of it, and you could tour it just like the original one that James Cawley has somewhere in the country for Star Trek, the original series. You can go tour his set. Like it's like a little museum you can go into.
I thought we had been on that set. I don't know if the actual original one we had been on, but we had been on that set for the ride, right?
Yeah, that might be the one that these people have.
The replica
is
one.
The one from Las Vegas on the Star Trek Experience, yeah.
Because that was awesome.
It was so cool. You wanted to stay there. We didn't stay long. They were running us around, and we're like, we kind of want to walk around the bridge. Don't rush us off the bridge.
Yeah, it's very similar to a Star Wars Disney 3D experience kind of thing, or 4D, actually, I guess what they consider, where they walk you around actual live sets with actors who are dressed up as Borgs, and they're trying to invade you, and you're trying to get off the ship, and it's awesome.
Yeah, it was really cool. Then they threw us on a shuttle, and that was like the big ride. Oh, the Borg's coming at you. And so pretty much... Yeah, you wonder how are they going to actually get out of this as the Borg have taken over Starfleet with the help of the Changelings, which has been all season long. The Changelings have been working for the Borg. And that made sense. That face that Vadik was talking to was a little slightly monotone, and now we know she was basically talking to, what, a Changeling Borg? I don't know.
Yeah, that is the interesting thing. I do say that as far as like a storyboard goes, I think this does make sense. I don't know if it translated as well as it could have into the season. We spent a little bit too much time on some characters I'm not going to mention that happen to not be in the show, and then the show's a lot better. Raffy.
Whoa, okay then.
But the idea of... The Borg working with the Changelings is interesting because we know that the Changelings, obviously, from the Deep Space Nine, have a lot of hate for the Federation. And we also know that the Borg have kind of split off into different sects, essentially. And this could have easily been one that still hates, you know, the Federation, wants to assimilate. So that all makes sense. The transporter thing with Jean-Luc Picard's DNA is a bit of a stretch, but I thought it was cool.
Like, it was clever.
Yeah.
Basically, the Borg are invading everybody through the transporter, and somehow it only affects young people. So, like, all the geriatrics have to fight back somehow.
Yeah, I was like, okay, that makes sense. That's fine. I mean, again, it's one of those things where you're almost crossing into fantasy a little bit with the whole, well, his DNA is special, and that's why we need it. But at least it did tie into the Star Wars universe and the lore a little bit, where it's like, well, it's because he was a Borg, and it was because he developed this thing later that we knew about, and then he had a son that we didn't know. And it's a lot of pieces that come together that didn't necessarily happen in the original show, you know, in the sense of, like, he didn't have a son.
We didn't know about that.
And he didn't know they had this like mental condition that he developed, but
well, we did know about that disease.
Well, then it was something else.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It turned out it wasn't a mental disease.
It's not this. It's that.
Yeah, that was like, oh no, you never had that. The Borg did it to you. Oh,
but in terms of like that, I was like, all right, well, you know, that's at least it was all there. It wasn't like they just made something up out of thin air where they're like, well, actually, he has a wart on the back of his left hand, and that is a. Special uranium that they need to do something with.
And the showrunner, Terry Mosalis, he's done a great job. He's a huge fan, and he has done a great job. He's got the praises are sung by the people that are working with him, the cast and everything. And, yeah, so we are ready for a big battle as it's the Enterprise D versus the entire Federation fleet for Frontier Day, which I didn't realize Frontier Day did basically, it's all about the time that the Federation was semi-formed when Captain Jonathan Archer went and made peace, helped make peace with the Andorians, the Tellarites, the Vulcans, and they all got together and hung out, and that's what Frontier Day is supposed to celebrate, is that moment when they did this charter and created basically what was the foundation of the Federation.
Yeah, and this is essentially a Star Trek show of nostalgia trip for Star Trek fans.
Yep.
And that's fine, because that's what I thought Picard was going to be.
Yeah.
So, happy that we're getting it in the third season. I mean, How many different feels did you get? You got the Geordi Data speech. You got the Ready Room meeting with all the old cast. You got the Enterprise again.
You got Data beating Lore, finally.
Yes. Yeah. And then in a good way. I actually thought, all right, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, Data was actually very intelligent with how he took over his brother, who basically, and they both inhabited the same body, and the brother looked like he was going to take control.
Well, that was that was well done in my mind because of the Sung dynasty that he essentially was left. And he was like, well, I think at the end of the day, with all of us in one body, what will end up happening is it'll be a merger of Data and Lore and then our programming. I was like, I actually thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, it was good. And it was great to see Lore and Data finally figure it out. It's like everything you would want to do for the end of a show that never got done at the end of the show.
Yes.
You know, when the series ended, seems to be happening. And now we are left to wonder, and we should, like Vicky said, we let's have some predictions of what we think is going to happen, though a lot of you might have seen it already by the airing of this podcast. But Jack, of course, better be doing something, as he was assimilated, basically, at the end of this episode. He went voluntarily to be the Borg Queen. Don't know which Borg Queen this is because of last season.
And they didn't show us a face.
Yeah, so I don't know if this is what the heck is going on. And then if it isn't the Allison, the Allison Pill actress, that Borg Queen that we saw last season, will she save the day? Will Jack save the day? Are they going to get help from other... I saw a preview, and it doesn't look like they're going to get help from anybody because they sent out distress signals, and they're all blocked. So, like, there are the Romulans, the Klingons, whoever else is part of the Federation. They didn't join up against the fleet, so could another fleet come and help? Of course, it would decimate. I mean, it's horrible either way you look at it.
Yeah, so I honestly got to the end of that episode. I'm like, I don't know how they're going to win. Like, it's going to be something, but I'm excited to find out.
Yeah, and will they bring out any more people? Like, are there any more people from Next Gen past that are going to guest star in this last episode? Because I don't know if you recognize Shelby.
No.
Okay, Admiral Shelby, and this is why when Picard said the fact that she would join all these ships together like this, it's very Borg-like, very ironic. Admiral Shelby was in The Best of Both Worlds. She was the blonde who was trying to take Will Riker's job.
Oh, wow.
She was brought in to be the Borg expert, and she was the one that said, well, I hope to impress Captain Picard, but, to get the job. And Riker's like, what job are you talking about, Shelby? Your job. Actually, she never even had a name on the Best of Both Worlds episodes. It was just Commander Shelby.
That's
so I was like, oh, that is so awesome that they brought her back for this one thing. And it looks like she wasn't back long, but she was back. And
no. Yeah.
So that was a cool bring back, and we've had Ro. And so who are they going to bring back? Will there be one more guest star? Like somebody that maybe.
Well, I was going to say we saw Tuvok, but there were rumors that Janeway was going to make an appearance at some point.
I don't have a problem with that at all.
That would be awesome.
She's an admiral. Let her kick ass, damn it.
Well, we'll have to wait and see. Again, you guys may have already seen it, but we will talk about it in the near future. But until then, we must get to
The Geek Sheet with Vicky B.
Because it's Movie Friday, Vicky.
Movie Friday. And yeah. I do actually have a little bit of Star Trek news, about a movie.
The Final Frontier.
It has been announced a couple days ago, so this is big and important, and I didn't want to not mention it. But it has been officially confirmed that Michelle she's having Section 31, but as a film. Confirmed. Instead of a series, they're wanting to make a Section 31 series, but it has now officially been confirmed that they're going to be doing it as a movie specifically for Paramount Plus.
I'm so happy that it's only a movie because I feel like that's all we need.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that was the prequel to the Discovery first season. Is that the idea what it's going to be? Because Section 31 was the people that she worked for, correct?
Yes. Section 31 was Michelle Yeoh went and joined them I should say Giorgio, the evil Giorgio from the Mirror Universe. She joined Section 31 and they helped beat to Control, which was season 3's.
After.
Yeah. So, but Section 31 has been around since I think we were first introduced with Deep Space Nine. They're the ones that infected the Borg, infected the changelings. And so they were brought up in the latest season of Picard. That was Section 31 that did that. So Section 31 has been shadowy. We've seen them also talked about in Enterprise, I believe. But they were introduced in Deep Space Nine. And as it seems, they've been around a long time. Mm-hmm. Section 31 it's this unofficial spy network of Star Trek that you kind of go, wow, I don't know if Roddenberry would have approved this because they're a-holes.
And that's actually what this article, it's from a comic book geekresources.com, they said that even though it is a long-running presence in the franchise, it remains a controversial part of the lore because many fans believe the concept of a black ops team going to an extreme and awfully deadly lengths to protect the Federation undermines the core message of the world, which is kind of what you're saying.
Yeah, and Jonathan Frakes backs me up on this.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and you know what? Look, Jonathan Frakes, he's been all over Star Trek, directing, acting, so I think that this guy gets to have an opinion, definitely.
He knows a thing or two.
Yeah, he gets to have an opinion, and he respectfully believes that Gene is wrong, because Gene never wanted conflict. That's the idea. He never wanted the humans to be in conflict with each other. You know, he wanted them all to get along. But the thing is, Gene hid all his conflict with all of the alien races, and I look at it like, that's a cop-out. Mm-hmm. And if any Star Trek fan goes, well, it's okay for the Klingons to be a-holes, it's okay for the Romulans, they're still beings. And if you're talking about wanting to have a wonderful utopian universe, you can't go, well, those guys aren't as enlightened as us, so... No, conflict exists everywhere.
Yes.
And so that's what Jonathan Frakes says, and I agree. Star Trek is great when you still have conflict amongst humans, because we will never be free of that. I just don't think we ever will.
It is within our nature. Yeah. I feel like it within the nature of a lot of beings.
And I think that Deep Space Nine was a great show, and it was because they had a lot of conflict, and they had a lot of moral questions and crossed lines. They had to live.
But we do actually have some movies that are coming out this week, as well as some that have come out previously, but we weren't here. And this movie, I'm trying to remember what it was said. It was like Edgar Wright means something else. What was it? Edgar Wright means Quentin Tarantino. So if you mix Edgar Wright and Quentin Tarantino, you have this movie.
Oh,
and it has
wow.
an actress that we very much like. You may not recognize her name, Ritu Ira. She was in...
Oh, I do know who...
I
do recognize that name. What was she in?
She was in The Umbrella Academy.
Ah!
Layla.
Oh, Layla. Yeah, Layla's so good.
But this one's called Polite Society. As of right now, it's got 94% on the tomato meter.
Whoa!
And it looks really badass. It's a merry mashup of sisterly affection, parental disappointment, and bold action. Polite Society follows a martial artist in training, Rhea Khan, who believes she must save her older sister, Lena, from her impending marriage. After enlisting the help of her friends, Rhea attempts to pull off the most ambitious of all wedding heists in the name of independence and sisterhood.
All right.
I saw the trailer. It popped up as one of my ads, and it looked so badass, so fun. It's going to be coming out this Friday, or today. Yes, today is Friday. Oh, man. It looks like it's going to be a fun one. As of right now, it looks like it's only in theater. So go check that out if that's nearby. Or if you're still kind of feeling like you want some Star Wars, check your select theaters. Star Wars Return of the Jedi 40th anniversary is going to be premiering in some theaters.
Oh, no. Really? Yeah, it's 2023, 40th anniversary.
Wow.
That's right, 1983. This kid stood in line with your mom, Joe. She was my girlfriend at the time, and she wasn't
a joke. It was literally your mother.
Hey. Yeah, she was a trooper, but I was like, gotta stand in line for this.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, because back then you couldn't buy tickets or anything.
No,
you stood in line, man. And, I mean, they probably put it on all the screens they could at the time, but we didn't have the theaters like we have today.
No, so to watch it on a big, maybe even IMAX screen, depending, check your local listings. If that is something that is up your alley, definitely go check that out. Some movies that have, I think this one's also coming out this week, so before I get into last week's, I will be so glad when these freaking trailers and ads stop showing when I'm watching my YouTube at night, because it's scary. Evil Dead Rise.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I forgot about that.
Creepy, and every now and then it's like, la, 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 video. Oh, no, don't look.
Is it a show?
It's a movie.
It's a movie, and is our boy Ash in it, or?
No.
So it's a whole, is Sam Raimi part of this?
It does not look like it, at least not from like the first glance over. It looks like the director is Lee Cronin.
Okay.
Produced by Rob Tappert, but it's getting well reviewed as of now, 96% with 51 reviews. Granted, that could change.
And it is the Evil Dead universe.
Yes, and I remember there being another Evil Dead movie years ago, because I was forced to go to the theater and watch it. I was not happy. But that one did not have Ash in it as well. It was kind of like a, not a reimagining, but a reboot, because they had a lot of the same themes as the Ash one. Like, the girl, I think, had a chainsaw, and I don't remember. She might have chopped her hand off, too. But yeah, if you like the Evil Dead franchise, check it out, because I won't.
Too scary.
Too scary. I do want to get into some of the other ones that have come out since we last talked. The Last Kingdom, Seven Kings Must Die. This one is getting, it's a Netflix movie, and I've seen it high on the list of like must-watch movies. Not really, I don't know too many of the actors. They all look very British and very fancy. But it's Alexander Draymond reprises his lead role as the great warrior Uhtred of Bebbanburg. Say that five times fast.
Oh, so this is a second production?
I don't know if it's a second movie or if this is like from a TV or series to a movie. So if this is up your alley, if you like horses and medieval times and sexy accents, kind of Viking-esque.
Ooh, sexy accents.
Yes, definitely check this one out. As well as we have, well, we already did Evil Dead, the Super Mario Brothers movie. Everyone was hating on it in the, you know, tomato meter part, 58%, but the audience score is 96% with over 10,000 verified ratings.
Well, this is one of those things where, I mean, if you're a Mario fan, how are you not going to like the movie? And if you're a critic, unless you're a Super Mario fan, you're probably, and maybe it's a fan servicey thing. That's the trouble with movies nowadays is that critics will go, well, I'm going just as a critic. It's like, yeah, now we're making movies for the fans. And
for kids. Yeah, this is definitely a kid movie.
Yeah, I heard this one didn't hit like the Lego movies. I think that was the big disappointment. As they said, the budget and the world was there, but the plot and everything and the humor was kind of hit or miss.
Oh.
What was the humor? I'm wondering if it was hit or miss because the humor was meant for kids, or were they trying to be that, like, they were trying too hard to also appeal to adults. I'm debating on going to see this in theaters with the little brother because...
Yeah, you'd have to go to see to see what Joey's talking about,
exactly.
I would think, because that made the Lego movie special was the writing.
But I felt like the Lego movie, yes, it worked for kids, but I felt like it was very fun for adults. So I'm very curious on how this translates, although I hear that there is a song that Bowser sings about Peach that is supposed to be phenomenal.
All right.
Especially since Jack Black sings.
I don't know if that's worth me seeing the movie with my money. I have so many services, I might wait.
You might wait to see it. Another one that I really would like to watch at some point, it's called Renfield. This is the horror comedy movie with Nicolas Cage.
Well, I liked his Unbearable Weight movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, I think Nicolas Cage is on the comeback.
We also have Nicholas Hoult in it as well. Aquafina, Ben Schwartz.
Oh, Aquafina's awesome.
Oh, yeah. She's pretty fun. This looks all kinds of shenanigans. It's modern day. Like, it looks like, excuse me.
Oh, pardon me.
Renfield is actually Nicholas Hoult's character, his master being Dracula, played by Nicolas Cage. I kind of saw some of the trailers looking like old-timey, like Dracula, and so it looks like he's been with him for a very long time.
Yeah, I'm not a huge Dracula fan, but if it's on something free, I'll probably watch it.
I'll probably go check it out at some point if I can get a date. So.
Oh, what? You need a date to go see it because it's too scary?
Yes. Okay. I don't know. Because sometimes his teeth freak me out a little bit. So I don't know. I'm like in that, like, eh. And also scary, The Pope's Exorcist, which is getting 83% on the audience score. So
The Pope's Exorcist. Like the title.
It's got Russell Crowe.
I know that guy.
As Father Gabriel. So yeah, if you like the scary stuff, there's plenty out for you. And until next time, stay nerdy.